This week is Parshas Vayigash, and since most Vayigash classes begin with analyzing Yehuda's long speech, we're not going to. Okay, and we're just going to skip to Perek Mem Hei and Yosef's reaction. Okay, suffice it to say, I mean, I'll just say one quick thing about it. That one thing that is what's clear that is not clear is that we don't know what Yosef's plan was. Meaning, it looked like he was going to carry on this charade, but something in Yehuda's speech triggered Yosef to react in the way which he does. And that is that's a bigger discussion, which we're not going to go into now, but that's a good piece of homework. What is it that got Yosef to say, you know, game's over? Okay, so that's a piece of homework. Pasuk Aleph in Parak Mem Hei, page 252. V'lo yachol Yosef lihisapek l'chol anitzavim alav. Now we've in past years we've looked at the word lihisapek, what it means, and the Netziv doesn't really translate the word, but he kind of goes with the general idea that Yosef just couldn't contain himself or control himself, but he needed to. With all the people that were around. So Lehisapek means, I mean, I don't remember if it was last year, 2 years ago, that we saw Lehisapek means that he couldn't get the words out. Mm-hmm. That he couldn't get the words out. And so when you have L'chol Anitzavim Alav, he doesn't want to get it out to all those who are standing around him. Vayikra Hotziu Kol Yishma Alai. So he says, get everybody out of here. V'lo Amad Yishitav Uzvaday Yosef Alachav. So a couple of things which the Netziv notes. The first thing you see at the end of the first line, where he says that Yosef was basically nisiyayish mikiyum achalom shel shtachavos hashemesh, that he was done. In other words, Yosef had this vision, I guess. I don't mean vision like a premonition, but Yosef's idea of understanding his dreams. And we saw this a lot last week, actually, was that he felt that he needed to make his dreams happen. And the way that they needed to happen was somehow, in a way, that the brothers, again, in his view, didn't know that it was him. So if he could somehow get everybody down and have everybody bow in the way that they needed to bow, then that would be great. But the fact that Yosef realizes, I'm going to tell them who I am, I need to, for a whole host of reasons, mostly related to his feelings about his father. We didn't go over it, but if you look, you'll see that Yehuda mentions two things that Yosef probably did not realize. One, that his father has been mourning for Yosef. And two, that if Binyamin doesn't go back home, Yaakov is going to die. Okay, and that plays into the Netziv's understanding of what Yosef says, and very specifically what Yosef says in the way that he speaks to his brothers. So, and that's the thing which he says here. Look in the middle of the second line of Pasuk Aleph, Ki Aviv Yehei Mesukan L'Mavis, when he heard that. So he needed the brothers to get out, not the brothers to get out, he needed everybody else to get out, because he knew that he was going to say to them, guys, you're the ones who sold me, Hashem Echartem Osi. And he did not want that kind of information to get out to other people. So, V'lo Amad Ish, the Netziv says, when he said Kol Ish, even though what he meant was, look at the end of that first line in the second paragraph that I gave you, is lemashar sav lehotzi anashim zarim. Now, there are a lot of foreigners there, people who are also trying to get food. And he was telling his officers, get all these people out. He says they understood. He didn't, even though Yosef didn't say, I want all my officers, meaning all my masharsim, all my servants, to get out as well. But they understood from the way that he spoke that he wanted them out as well. And in fact, they all left. So all that was left is, v'lo amad ish ito, bisvada Yosef elachav, that there is nobody there when Yosef is revealing himself. So Yosef cries in Pasuk Beis. Everybody hears it. Yishma Mitzrayim, Yishma Beis Paro, which gives us an indication that the walls are thin, if there are walls at all. And Pasuk Gimel, v'yomer Yosef elachav, ani Yosef ha'od avichai. Now, what does he say afterwards? Right, if you look, I mean, let's just look at the Pesukim. He says, I am Yosef, is my father alive? The brothers were not able to answer because they were just, flummoxed. I mean, art school says disconcerted, but I think it's stronger than that. Vayomer Yosef elachav gishuna elai vayigashu. Yosef says, come closer, and they do. Vayomer ani Yosef achichem asher mechartem osi mitzrayma. I'm Yosef, your brother, whom you sold to Egypt. So he says ani Yosef twice, but I mean, what other Yosef could he possibly be? So, A, why didn't he say Achichem the first time? And why did he say Achichem the second time? And what's with Asher Mechartem Osim Mitzrayim that you guys sold me to Egypt? If he wants to shock them, which he accomplished with the first line, so what does he need to shock them again?
That's just more of a belief because it's that's something.
Baruch Shekivanta. Baruch Shekivanta. That's what he says. Okay, he says, first of all, let's just look in the order in which he says it. He says, Ani Yosef, v'lo amar Hashem rechartem osi. So he doesn't say at the first, when he first reveals himself, that you sold me, because he knows that people are listening. That's the first point that he makes. Okay? V'asher evin ki shamimi b'chutz. He knows people are listening. So when he says to them, because they're still further away, he has to break down that wall, that barrier, so that when he says to them, Geshuna Eli, come close, they'll feel comfortable doing it. Because who knows? Maybe there's a video camera, right? If they take a step too close, they're afraid that some guard may come out and knock them down. Who knows?
Also, the fact that once he revealed himself, so they were probably so shocked. What do you think they would do? They'd back up.
Right.
They'd move away.
Right, further away. So,
okay.
Wait a second. No. So Geshuna Eli, come over. So he comes. Okay. So then he says, Ha'od Avichai. Now, why does he say it that way? And the Nitziv begins. It says, what do you mean? I mean, what kind of question is that? Did he not know that he was alive? So if you look at the middle of the second line, he says, we need to consider, and as I said at the outset, Yosef, what's clear is that it's not clear that he had a plan. Okay, now once he reveals himself to his brothers, there's no script for them. Oh, you're Yosef. Oh, that's very nice. I mean, what are they going to say? What's the reaction? So what? And so the Nitziv is saying, if they hadn't been so flabbergasted, okay, what would they have said? So the first thing that the Nitziv does is he gives us a little bit of a Musar Shmuz. So look in the middle, towards the end of this, of the third line. Uma tochach ha-shel basar v'dam, kach tochach ha-shel kadosh baruch v'alachas kam v'kama. Right? I mean, the brothers are, as the figure of speech goes, they're caught with their pants down, in the sense that Yosef has basically said, I know, and you know, and this, so, and he has all the opportunity in the world to get them back, but he doesn't. But they are, it's like roll the videotape, right? I mean, there's a traffic judge in Providence, I think, Rhode Island, who's very, very popular on the internet, because he has a very, I forget his name. Anyway, but people come in for traffic.
The dancing
guy? No, he's a traffic judge.
He's on TV.
Yeah, he's on TV. Joe something or other. Anyway, so people come in, and he's a very sweet gentleman, and he does the law, but he also talks to people, and it's on television. So people come in, and he says, okay, you know, you ran a red light, or you ran a stop sign. So somebody says, not guilty. So he says, okay, let's roll the tape. Okay, and they said, all right, I guess I did it. You want to change your plea? I said, I mean, that's a cute example, but Yosef saying that, so that's the first part. And it's not, I mean, that's the, that's in the Gemara Chagiga, right? And that is Rabbi Elazar. So then Nitziv throws that out at us. But follow after that, so, I mean, what kind of rebuke is this from Yosef here? What does matmiya mean? That he is trying to shock in a way. Matmiya means to create some kind of a wonder. In be MS od avichai v'lo meis midaga so alai, right? In other words, he wants them to contemplate how they didn't think once upon a time, right? He says, "Ha'od avichai, is my father alive?" Meaning, I know that he's alive. You've told me over and over, but now that you're saying that, if Binyamin would be taken away, he would die.
Where was that? What I was thinking.
Right. Why didn't you think about that once upon a time? You guys knew I was the favorite. What about my father? You keep on telling about Avinu. What about my father? What about Yosef's father? Okay, and that's his rebuke to the brothers. Just that alone. That even if they were right, that Yosef needed to be gotten rid of, in whatever manner they got rid of him. Okay, they still should have thought about their father. And so that's why I skipped the end of the line. They were caught with their pants down. Okay, as the figure of speech goes. And they, so that was Yosef's musar to the brothers, and they are, they're completely embarrassed. And that's why they can't, because they never actually thought about that. Skip a line and go towards the end, after he says, Mikol makom, you see where I am? Like the third to last full line. Vadai kulam ahuvim elav. Okay, so he, and is that what, maybe what they might have said is that kulam ahuvim elav u'chemosh u'mikolshkein arigam binyamin kayam, and so clearly they do, you know, love him and Binyamin's alive. V'imkein lo igiya tzar avim kol kach shelo yep mipnei zeh. So what they'd be saying is, you know what, you make a good point, but the fact of the matter is that he didn't die after you were gone. Aval lo yachlu la'amo b'tocha chaso mipnei ha'behala. But the fact of the matter is that they were not able to. In other words, they might have been able to say, you're right, but he is alive. So, you know, we know what we're saying, but maybe we were just trying to convince you. The fact that you could throw that back at us, all right, we weren't really prepared for that. We didn't know it was you. But the fact of the matter is, and he concludes back with the Musaf word. Right, we want to tell God, no, we didn't mean it. We're going to do better. Tshuva, yeah, right, buddy. Okay, so Yosef is playing a very significant role here in transferring a Musar message to the brothers in just saying Ha'od Avi Chai Avi. That's the message that the Netziv is bringing. Geshuna Eli. Okay, so I mentioned that before. We won't have to read it inside. The walls have ears. He actually says that to Oznayim Lekos Le'Abayis towards the end of that first line, and then afterwards he says that he spoke to them without emotion as he did the first time, uvelachash, and much more quietly because he wanted to say them. And then Yisrael gets into what you said, Asher Mechartem Osi Mitzrayimah, second to last paragraph on the page. V'lo yada ish mizeh zulaso. And who else would know about that? And the answer is just him. And that's more than enough proof to the brothers that he is who he says he is. And the Netziv notes that even though we saw a couple weeks ago that pasuk about that the Midyanim took him out by Yimshechu by Yalu Yosef ben Abor, the Netziv was of the view that the brothers, actually he mentioned a couple different options, but I think that he concluded in his own view that the Midyanim did the work, but the brothers oversaw it. In other words, they were involved. They allowed it to take place, and that is in fact what he says here. Look at the towards the end of the second line in that paragraph, again, second to last paragraph on the first page. El mishum shem garmu ledavar. They were the cause of it. V'gam ayabi adam limchos. They could have prevented it. They could have said, you know what, we're not selling him. This is a mistake. Give us our brother back and all that. But they didn't do that, and so Yosef does blame them. And that is something which is a further tochacha, but I think that they, you know, that part they've already they've already reconciled. Now the question is, what is Yosef meaning that maybe they shouldn't have done that? The question is, what is Yosef looking to get out of his brothers? Is he looking for them to feel guilt? Is he looking for them to blame one another? Does he want for them to really hash it out between them and come to some kind of conclusion that is real charata, real regret, real apology? So, I don't know. I mean, the fact that Yosef reveals them gets us perhaps to reach a conclusion that Yosef felt that the time was right. Whatever it was that the brothers had to prove with respect to their protection of Binyamin has been proven, and the charade can end. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that they don't need to learn a lesson from back in the day. Because yes, now that they're faced with the possibility of a son of Rachel being taken away from them, so they're doing everything right. But that doesn't mean that you can't still say, you know what, maybe what you did back in the day you should feel a little more guilty than you ever may have felt. So that's where he's going. But then Yosef says, look back on the Torah for a second, Pasuk Hey. V'ata al teyatzavu v'al yichar be'enichem ki mechartem osihena. So even if they are feeling guilt, so the Musar Shmuz is over, and Yosef is giving them further instruction that you should not be, what's teyatzavu?
Sad.
Right, sad. What's v'al yichar? Yichar means angry, right? V'al yichar be'enichem ki mechartem osihena. So why would they be sad, and why would they be angry?
They would be angry, or he would be angry?
No, he's telling them not to be sad or not to be angry. So maybe they'd be angry at one another, right? Okay, because why did you guys... Right, I'm saying, well, why did you guys all agree? Or why did we all agree? It's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. And maybe why would they be sad?
That's maybe because he's still alive and
stopped. Ah, amazing, right? Yeah. Right, maybe because he's still alive. Look what he says. This is mind-blowing. Okay? He says... So let's read it. These two totally different messages. You're sad because you're disappointing yourself. V'chari is you're upset that somebody else did something to you. So that there are some brothers who are upset. Like, how could we have done such a... I mean, what were we thinking? There are some who are thinking that, right? What did we do? He said that we were right. We just messed up. Why? They sent them to Egypt, which is the most powerful place. Because in Egypt, Yosef has the opportunity to become in the position that he's in. We should have sent them, you know, we should have put them on a boat, sent them to South Africa or whatever, I mean, you know, make up a place where nobody ever would have heard from him again. So below a skill and cross the Medina Pachusim, Amala, Shaloy Abshalaluska. We should have sent him some, you know, some Madagascar, I don't know, where nobody ever would have heard him again. Al Zamar Al Tetzbu. So he says, first don't be sad, Gamal Yichabainichem, and don't be angry. Mufarish ki machartemosi over that which you sold me. Zeu Bir al Atzavu Shigila Lahem Masa Machira. So that's their sadness that they went through this selling. Over whatever anger might be that they sent me specifically to this place, not to some other place, which would have been much to their advantage if they were really trying to get rid of me. Saying, guys, this really wasn't your call. Like, there's nothing that you could have done. Because this is all coming from God. And so therefore... Next line, what are you going to get angry about? Okay, and the fact of the matter is, if you go skip to the end of the next line where it says the last three words is a comma and then Aval Yada Yosef. Aval Yada Yosef, she'en gam echav, bekerv echav, she'itzterata al shelo nevad Yosef yon. Like none of his brothers, you know, once they process this whole thing, is upset that, oh, Taka, he's alive. Oh, we're really mad. I mean, the fact of the matter is that things have worked out differently.
And
it worked out great because now this is God's plan. So you guys don't get sad, don't get angry, because it is what it is. And by the way, that also could answer for the question that we have at the end of the paragraph when Yosef is sold. That you have the Midyanim, and you have the Yishmaelim, and you have the Midanim. The fact of the matter is, he was sold a bunch of times. And that's what, I don't remember if Rashi says, but some of them, Farshim, they say that Yosef was sold as many as five or six or seven times. They try to explain how all the different people who had him. So if Yosef is a slave, he got bounced around. Eventually, he would end up in Egypt anyway. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter. That's the point that Yosef is trying to make them to them. And so therefore, you know, no, there's no reason to get mad.
Maybe he's also trying to teach them that there's a hashkacha
prata. Yeah, and that's why they should not get upset. So he says to them, look back at the pasuk vav. He's eshna asayim arav bekerav haaretz ve'od chamishan emesherin charish v'katzir. We've had 2 years, there'll be another 5 years. Vayishlacheni olim techem l'simchem sheris baaretz. God had a plan. He sent me here first. Olachios lem l'fleitol gedola. And so this is how we're going to survive. V'yatar lo atem shlachtem osi heina Kielahim. I mean, I don't know why he repeats it again, but okay. But he's giving them information that he wants them to specifically tell over to Yaakov, and that's what he says in Pasuk Tes. Maharu va'alu el elavi. Now, look in the Nitziv, second line in Pasuk Ches. Okay, so on page 2, second paragraph, second line. One thing he is of the view that Harei lo evin Yosef lo achim shezev atzchalas galus shenigzel Avraham Avinu. Yosef did not know, neither the brothers, that this is going to be the beginning of their exile. Ad shamar Hashem liYaakov anochi eredi mechem, until when Yaakov goes to Beersheba on the way down, where God says, I'm going to go down and I'm also going to take you out. Avalata now biges Yosef sheyevol mitzrayim al meshech chamesh shanim rav. Yosef had a 5-year plan for them. Guys, there's going to be another 5 years of famine. So this is where you got to be. This is the easiest way for us to all survive together. And then afterwards, you know, we'll be on our way. And not only that, but he tells them his plan. Pasuk Tes, Maharu ba'alu alavi, right, go up to my father, Ramatem my love, I'm back in the Pasuk, Komar bin Chay Yosef, page 254. So says your son Yosef, Samani Elim Ladon L'chom Mitzrayim, I'm a master over Egypt. You will live in the land of Goshen. You'll be close to me. You and your children, your grandchildren, and everything that you have. And I'm going to take care of you there because there are another 5 years of famine. Lest anything happen during that time, you're better off near me. Okay? Last pasuk for now. You guys see, and Binyamin sees, that it is my mouth which is speaking to you, which presumably means that he's no longer speaking through an interpreter, and that they understand that this is Yosef and this is the real deal. Take a look at pasuk test. So Yosef now told them, I'm going to give you the land of Goshen. Okay? Now that's fascinating, because Yosef is in charge, except there's one person who's more in charge. Paro is more in charge. And so when Yosef's family comes down, he brings them to Paro, hoping to convince Paro to give them the land of Goshen. So how does Yosef know? I mean, can Yosef really make that call? Can Yosef make that call? So the answer is, yeah. But he's got to play politics. Yeah. And he's going to play politics. And it's actually pretty cool the way it works out. So take a look at what it says here. Yosef picked Goshen. Why? Look at the second line. Pasuk Tes in the Nitziv, page 2. So it's the third paragraph of the page. Mishum shiyada Yosef asher ein Yaakov hu sheishvu banav badad. That what Yaakov needed more than anything was for his brothers to was for the family rather to be in an isolation of sorts. Lo meurav b'anshei medina, not mixed up with other people from the land. Al kein ro'a laktzos Goshen. He says he wanted to clear out Goshen. There weren't a whole lot of Egyptians there. It was I don't know if it was an outpost, but it wasn't a very populated area. So he was gonna clear the place out.
That's really surprising because Goshen was very
fertile.
Very, very fertile. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So there were people there, but that goes into the whole question about how people viewed sheep. And what the definition of Tovas Mitzrayim means. Right, and what the definition of Tovas Mitzrayim means, which we've talked about in the past. The Nitziv goes in a very different direction, by the way. I don't remember if I gave it to you. Anyway, Mishum Hachi, Imayarak Moshel, Loya Ro'i Lasos Kemishvil Aviv Echav. If he's only a Moshel, just a ruler of sorts, he couldn't do that for his family. Al Kain Adiyah Shehu Adon L'chom Mitzrayim. He says, guys, I am the master. I am the master. And by the way, there is a fascinating question. I don't have an answer to this question, although I do wonder about it. And that is, who's older, Yosef or Paro?
Ah.
It's you know, Yosef at this point in time is 39.
What difference
does
it make? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Paro can be
20,
but he's still
Paro. It doesn't matter unless when Yosef was 30, Paro was a kid.
Really? Was what?
A kid.
Didn't Paro say, I knew Yaakov? Didn't Paro say, I knew Yaakov? At one point?
Okay. No. There is a view that Paro looks at Yaakov and remembers Avraham. Okay, that means Paro's 200 years old. I mean, that's crazy. Okay, I mean, with all due respect. Okay, but the idea that Paro, here's Paro, very, very impetuous. He throws his Sara Mashkim and his Sara Ofim into jail because he just like, I'm going to play, see what kind of buttons I can do whatever I want. Yosef comes out of jail, and here's this kid who's the king, and he finds somebody who he feels he can trust, who he identifies with, and whatever, and who can become a father figure for him. And that is what Yosef says. He says, "Vayisimeni la'av l'faro." I'm a father to Paro. What does that mean?
He looks to me.
Okay, so it could be that you're right. It could be that Paro is older. It could also be that he's not, and that's the relationship which they have. It doesn't change. You're right. It doesn't change who Paro is. I am Pharaoh, right? I'm the god of the evening and the sun. Whatever.
We have the same type of scenario with Moshe when he goes, because they say was the Paro from the time from.
Okay, so that's a question that we can ask. In Moshe's case, very different. What I'm saying, but the relationship that Yosef and this Paro have somehow became, I mean, a very close relationship, for at least from the way that the Torah presents it to us. Anyway, where are we? Egyptians didn't live. So you can pull off this population transfer on account of the job which he has. He's an Adon L'chol Mitzrayim. And ve'achar shehema kavadav yesh b'chocho la'asos kirtzono u'la'aviro som nekatzeh l'katzeh. He can do that. That is a power which Yosef has. With respect to so the Nitziv says, you know, you guys might be looking at this and be all upset, and it's really, you mean you don't know how to process, but that's why he mentions Binyamin separately. Binyamin is not upset. Of all people, Binyamin is elated and extremely happy. So that's why he mentions him separately, because can you look at the last six words of that pasuk base? Ki Binyamin ro'eh. Bivarur ba'ayin yafe. Okay, they might not be looking at it this way, but Yosef does. Okay, we continue, and he and Binyamin cry on each other, and then vayinashek l'chol achav vayev kalihem. He kisses all of his brothers, and he cries upon them, and then they speak with him. So he says, why do they have to kiss them all? Why do they have to kiss them all? So what he says is essentially that the brothers were still concerned that Yosef's dream that they would bow down to him was going to be a long term relationship. So when he kissed them, he said, "Guys, it's over. It was a one time thing. My dream has been fulfilled.
Let's be brothers again.
We're brothers again, and now we're equal." And that is that's what he says there in the bottom. I don't want to read it inside, but yeah.
Lack in Batchila, the lack of shalom bias between brothers. Had a Kadosh Baruch who brought this all down in Yosef saw this to the Atchala of the Golos. And then Yosef saw that this would be the beginning of 400, how many years? 400 years? Of,
No, they're going to be in Egypt for 210.
So for 200 but, years, yeah. Right. And then we...
Right. I mean, we'll talk, maybe hopefully we'll get to it next week, but it is an interesting question as to whether Yosef ever forgave his brothers. Meaning they get along and Yosef takes care of them and he fulfills all of his vows and all of everything which he says. Right, but that's the question. In other words, when they come back from Yaakov's funeral and the brothers say, you know, our father commanded before he died that you shouldn't take any revenge, and Yosef cries, so he doesn't say, he says, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you and I'm never going to do anything, but he doesn't say, but I forgive you.
No,
which is, you know, it's an interesting question. Okay. Okay, we move on a little bit. Next couple of psukim. So skip so pasuk tezayin.
Even the fact that Yosef can forgive them, but it doesn't mean the fact that they don't deserve something for the fact of what they did. What they did was bad.
Correct.
True.
Correct. Correct.
But still what they did was totally
right. I'm not arguing with you. I agree that their deed at the time should be judged on its own merit, and its own merit is negative. Okay. Okay, Paro comes onto the scene, and Paro comes along and he says, Pasuk Zayin, I'm sorry, Pasuk Tes Zayin, Bo Achei Yosef, I'm sorry, the word came to Paro, that the brothers have come, it's good in Paro's eyes, Pasuk Zayin, Paro says to Yosef, tell your brothers to do the following, Tanuz Birechem, Luchu Bo Arts Canaan, right, go back up to Canaan, Luchu Asavichem, Esbatechem, Uvo Elai, take your father and your households, come to me, and I'm going to give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat from the fat of the land. Now I'm commanding, you should command to do the following, that you're going to bring agalos, and shechem, right, wagons for your children and for your wives, and then you're going to bring your father down, and don't even worry about your stuff. So how many times did he say that? Tuv Eretz Mitzrayim, right? Twice. So the Nitziv says, in Pasuk Chav, I'm just going to skip for a second, that Paro did not even realize what he did. Look what he says here. Look in the middle of the third line. V'karov lomar sheyatsami Paro dibor shelo evin hu gam kein. It's possible Paro didn't even realize the significance of what he was saying. Shakavana b'zaki kolato shemitzrayim u'bishvil Yisrael. That what Paro is saying, say, I'll give you the best. I'll give you everything. He says, no, it's going to be like when they leave, Sheyeh Moshav Yafel Bnei Yisrael, that it's going to be good stuff. And what's the promise at the end of Bris Ben Abisarim? That when you leave, Achechein, Yitzu Baruchush Gadol. Paro is basically dooming his nation to exactly that through saying that so many times. Go back to the top of the page here. Ukhuas Avichem. So what the Nitziv says is that what Paro wanted, Kacha Inyan, Paro Ratzah Shevo Bnei Yisrael Tachas Rishuso V'Yishtakim Mitzrayim. Paro wanted them to be his, and that he wanted them to stay in Egypt. But look at the second line. Avaloa Ya Yachol Achri Chamalzeh Shari Einim Ibnei Arzo. Problem was that Paro did not have; they weren't citizens of Egypt, so he couldn't force them or coerce them. He wanted them to leave their stuff in Canaan. Why? So that they would not be independent. He wanted them to be dependent on what?
Leave their stuff in Canaan or
Egypt? No, in Canaan. He wanted them to leave their stuff in Canaan. But right, so because they're not from Canaan. Aval zaya yachol la'achriach shelo yishalchu tvua le'eretz Canaan. But he wanted to make sure that they wouldn't be able to send anything. If they v'alkein yavo heima l'mitzrayim al'meshach shnei ara'av. He wanted them to come during this time.
They'll be dependent then.
Right. He wanted them to be dependent on Egypt. Okay? And if they don't have their own things to be able to send things up right? Because Paro would never approve for them, for example, to send, if they left some people to... I don't want to say he would never. But Paro wanted to be in control of whatever travel that they may have. So that's what he wanted to do. Did they listen? No. They brought down all of their stuff.
Difficult.
Okay. Right. Okay. Of course. So, all right. And now, after this, Yosef gives him some gifts, and he sends stuff to his father. If you turn the page in the Chumash, Pasuk Chaf Dalid, Vayishalach Esecha, Vayilechu, Vayomar Alehem, Al Tirgazu Badarech. Don't Tirgazu. So what is Tirgazu? Art School translates it to mean don't become agitated. Okay? What is Rogaz?
Anger.
Right? So look what it looks like. Right. So he says here, you shouldn't be mad at yourselves on the road. Why? Look at the and it, so he, the Nitziv highlights that he mentions the word badarech. Look at the middle of the second line. Mishum sheba emes ein miderech hachoch malusrageiz al mashik varavar. You guys want to get angry over the past? Look, you're not going to get anything out of that. Don't get angry over what happened. And not only that, and he says. Towards the end of the third line, v'gam ki b'mamad Yaakov aviyem yachdu l'davir b'zeh avo b'derech yisirem al-zeh. He says, when they get to their father, they're certainly not going to talk about it. Oh, you know, hey, you know, how did Yosef get down there? Oh, it's all our fault. Like, they're never going to do that. So he says, guys, it's not even worth harping on. Forget it. So don't get angry on the road. Just go home, get dad, and come back down here.
Yeah, but it's okay. So human. Don't here they are all together, and then here start talking about everything that's in place.
That's true, but it's such an important Musar Haskil. It's like it's It's like that. It's like the Riash. Line from the Lion King. Do you remember when Rafiki hits the monkey hits Simba with a stick, and he says to him, "What was that for?" He says, "It doesn't matter. It's in the past." That's what he's trying to say. What are you going to do? You got to move forward. You got to move forward. Vayomer Yisrael. Oh, so then they get down there. Pasuk, the first pasuk of Chamishi. Vayomer Yisrael. Ravo Yosef Nichai Elcha Ve'erenu B'terem Amus. So here it says Hisig Malas Yisrael. Why is he referred to as Yisrael here? And we're going to see actually in a couple of soon we're going to see where he makes a significant distinction between the name Yisrael and Yaakov. We're going to see that on the top of the next page. But he says, Malas Yisrael, V'rab Ruach Kodesh Yosef Omei B'tzidko, V'amar Rab. So, Rab Od Yosef Shama. So, he saw that Yosef is still a tzaddik. Skip to the second to last line. V'zeu Shamar Rab. Da'ili ma sh'ani yodeh ki Yosef chai. It's enough that I know that Yosef is alive. Avagav she'eni yachol Yosef mo b'tzav v'sachadu l'tzeis meretz Yisrael ach elcha v'erenu. So Yaakov really was concerned that he wouldn't be able to go there at all, because he thought that just like his father, who was not allowed to leave Eretz Canaan, that at this stage of his life he wouldn't be allowed to leave. But he goes to Be'er Sheva, and what happens there? God says to him, "Al." It's the next couple of psukim. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov, Vayomer Hineni. Top of the next page in the Chumash. Vayomer Anochi Elohei Avicha, Al Tira Meridam Mitzrayma, Ki L'Goy Gadol Asim Chasham. Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt, because you're going to become a great nation there. Not only that, but I'm going to take you down, and I'm also going to bring you back up. And so therefore, Yaakov was able to go down. It's an interesting thing, if you just follow the order of the psukim, in terms of the way that they describe the brothers going down with Yaakov. At some points it looks like he's dragging them. Sometimes it seems like they're dragging him. So what's that all about? Okay, we're not going to get into that, but I just wanted to draw that to your attention. But take a look at the way Yaakov is described. Pasuk Aleph. Okay? Back on 256. Vayisa Yisrael v'chol asher lo vayavo be'er Sheva vayizbach zvachim l'Elohei Aviv Yitzchak. Now, those who've been here before, you ought to know it's coming. L'Elohei Aviv Yitzchak. What about, right, Parnassa. What about Elohei Avi Avraham? So,
Haganah.
Right, Avraham is Haganah, protection, but he doesn't even do that. What's he concerned about? Parnassa only. And what does God say to him? Don't worry about going down to Egypt, because I'm going to take care of you down there. So there's the promise of Haganah, right, without it. But now you'll see how he focuses on Parnassa over here. So take a look. Pasuk Aleph, bottom page 3. Okay, look, skip to the end of the second line. Dieg akasa zvachim shema shlamim mitzugalim liyos lam leratzon leparnasa. Yaakov is concerned about how he's going to survive there. The dieg od, skip to the end of the line. Dieg od lehaviv yitzchak shehu haya mushgach biyichud leparnasa. Right. The whenever we have a mention of Yitzchak, the Netziv has been harping down our throats this idea that Yitzchak is representative of the idea of Parnassa. Skip the brackets. Okay, so we're at the beginning of the fifth to last line. Ubezem is Yasim Shabir Od Hadachsiv Lelohei. Ubem is Loksiv Bekarbonos Ella Lashem. So why does it say God and not Yudke Vavke? Okay, in other words, there's the karbanos are not to Hashem as Hashem, but they are to Hashem, who is kaviyachol being, you know, filling this role of Elokei Yitzchak, which is uchiyotz b'zen is b'parshas Yisro ma'izbach olo zvachim leluhim. Yeah, you on Shem, so we'd have to look that up, which I didn't give that to you. Anam adkon lo sachein ba'asher haya avel Yosef. He hasn't done this all this time because he was mourning for Yosef. V'yev shar lakru shlamim b'zman shu chaser ki yadua. And he couldn't bring his shlamim, because what does shlamim mean? Complete. And what's wrong with Yaakov's existence in all these years? He's incomplete. Aval atok yishav rucha hol b'datah lafik ritzon me'ashem b'zeh ofen v'lios v'eretz Yisrael. And he's specifically bringing this while he's still in Eretz Yisrael, because Yaakov has a very serious concern that when he goes down to Egypt, a few terrible things are going to happen. Okay? One of them is Take a look at the next pasuk, top of page 4. The Maros HaLaila, Yaakov sees this vision in a vision of the nighttime. Okay? And what is that? What is that, Laila? Took a look at the end of the line there. Laskilo shigia shal kabel love all galus shemukuna b'shem Laila. The vision of Laila that he had was not so much that it happened in the nighttime, but that he's getting a vision of the darkness of galus, which is coming. And there's going to be a darkness in the experience of Ruach HaKodesh, which is not going to happen so much anymore. Yaakov, Yaakov, right? God calls out to him, Yaakov, Yaakov. Here we have the Netziv commenting on, who's he speaking to? Who's God speaking to when he says Yaakov, Yaakov? If you look at the beginning of the pasuk, it says Vayomer Elohim LiYisrael, and he calls him Yaakov, Yaakov. So look at what he says here, Netziv. So in the second paragraph of page 4, El Mishum LiYisrael, Mashmao Bechina Gvoa Shayach BeYichud LiYuma HaYisraelis. That Yisrael refers to a higher level, which is specific to the nation. Which concerns itself with the spirit, things, matters of the spirit, and not of the physical world that the rest of humanity deals with. And Yaakov is more simple, right, in the ways of the world, which relate to other people. When you get down to Egypt, you're not going to be on this higher level anymore. So you're going to have to find other ways to sustain yourselves and to keep yourselves. And that is why Yosef was very cognizant of the idea that the family would have to be in their own place, in their own isolated area, which worked for, actually it worked until the end. Right? What do we say? That the B'nai Israel, with what merit did they get out of Egypt? Because they didn't change a few things about themselves. They didn't change their names, their clothing, whatever, their language. Okay, so those things they were able to maintain specifically because they were in an isolated area in Goshen. Another thing which the Netziv pointed out, which I didn't think about actually until I saw it, because I just assumed that they always lived there, but that they only lived there, but when Paruva Yishutzuva Yibuma Timalea Aretz of some. So when the pasuk in the beginning of Shemot says that they multiplied and the land was filled with them, they moved out of Goshen, right? They moved into the suburbs.
They moved into the
non-Jewish area. They moved into the burbs, right? They got to move into the burbs. And we know that they lived amongst the Egyptians from the whole Pesach story, right? Pesach means Passover, right? So I just assumed that Egyptians were living in Goshen until I saw that comment of the Netziv, where he says, no, the Jews were everywhere. The Jews were everywhere. And that was, so it's fascinating to consider that even though they were slaves, they had their own homes. They had their own homes. They had things which they owned. And it was just, it was a class, but not a, maybe, I'm going to mix up the words class and caste. All right, so I'm just going to leave that aside. But the point is that is just another fascinating thing to consider. And that also helps us understand why there was so much, even, despite the non-assimilation, there was so much assimilation in Avodah Zarah because the B'nai Yisrael were living amongst Egyptians. Okay, if they had stayed in Goshen, who knows? But because they, Batim Alei Arts or some, that they spread further and further out, that could happen. And that's what Pasuk Gimel, his comment is about, that Yaakov was really, really worried about the assimilation that's going to take place there.
You see this, Yaakov, probably further stream downstream, like, look how this is the first time that the Jewish nation came amongst us,
right,
came in, assimilated everything,
it's the first time
that they were slaves.
Okay, they're going to have this challenge.
At the end of Tur HaZahav, the same thing in the Sfarshu world. Tur HaZahav, they were there for, what, 500 years in Spain? Top of the things, mixed in with all the people, then thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Then look what happened in the Churban by Europe. There were hundreds of years, boom, thrown out. And here we are, back in America.
Yeah, here we are. Alright, so take a look at the fifth line, last three words in the line. Pasuk Gimel. Shasir of Yaakov, he was really concerned that the things would not last if they were to get mixed together with the nation. And only in Israel could they survive as a unique and independent entity in their own kind of nation. So that was a very significant concern. Okay, we're going to take well, I mean, the Chumash takes a small aside, and we're going to take this small aside with it to look at Psukim Zayin and Ches, and then we'll I guess we'll just finish with this stuff in this one parak, and then we'll bring it to a conclusion. Okay, the Torah goes on to describe the family of Yaakov coming down to Egypt, and what it does is it lists the children of Leah, and if you actually count the names of the descendants of Leah, there are 32 names. But if you look at the very bottom on page 258, what does it say? Kol nefesh banav nosav shloshim v'shalosh. That it's 33. Okay, now how you get to that 33? There are different interpretations. Art scroll and its chart on the bottom of the next page gives a few possibilities. One is that it's Yocheved. Another one is that it's Yaakov. Another one is that it is the divine presence himself, which is number 33. A year or two ago, we saw the possibility that it's Osnas Bas Potifera, who according to one view was the product of Dina, daughter of Dina, and Shechem. So that could be 33 as well. But the fact of the matter is that it lists 32, but calls it 33. And then when you add up the numbers of everybody else, Zilpah 16 plus Bilhah 7, that's 23, plus Rachel is 14, that's 37. 37 plus 33 equals 70. The problem is that we're missing one person. Okay, so we're going to get to that in a second, in Pasuk Ches, but I wanted to show you Pasuk Zayin, with his comment, because it's something which, you know, it probably bothered me, but I didn't think about it so much. Look at Pasuk Zayin. It says that who came down with Yaakov? Banav uvnei banav ito, binosav uvnos banav v'chol zaro. His sons and his grandsons, his daughters, and the daughters of his sons, and everybody else. So look at the Nitziv. We're going to read it together. Perish Rashi, regarding the Banos Banav, that there's Yocheved and Serach. The problem is that Yocheved isn't mentioned at all in this context, so I'll leave that aside. It's a little crazy to consider that Yaakov's sons only produced boys and no daughters. Even Serach. Serach is only listed as Serach Achosam, and we've seen this in the past as well, Serach is presumed to be the daughter of Usher's wife from a different marriage. There were a bunch of girls. Ela Shaloa Yubuchal Shim Nefesh. But for whatever reason, they weren't counted in the 70. Serach, according to this view, Yocheved, right, the 70, Dina, I mean, they certainly are counted. So everybody else was not counted. Okay, interesting. Below od el diagav atzmo hayulo od banos minashav kimash maos hakasuv leel lamed hey vayakumu kol banav v'chol banosav. Right, when Yosef is gone and they wanted to comfort Yaakov, the sons and daughters all came to comfort him. The sons and the daughters-in-law. How many of them were married? We don't even know. I mean, maybe Yehuda, maybe, but I don't know. El shalodis kubishma mishum shaloya behem inyan ogei luma yisraelis. But they weren't mentioned by name because they were not the future of the nation. In those days, you know what you had? Patrilineal descent. Matrilineal descent wasn't introduced yet. If you were a son of Yaakov's kids, his sons, you're in the Shvatim. Okay, so now what do we have now? Judaism is passed through the mother.
Right.
But tribe is passed through the father. In those days, there was no Judaism. It was just tribe. And so therefore, the girls, I don't want to say didn't matter, but they were not passing on nationhood. Kamosha Iral Yidei Dina, right? What do we know about Dina's children?
Nothing.
Okay? V'altisma, sharigam bar mavinu, ika tana babas, I guess who? Shahayel Abbas, Avram Avinu had a daughter. But she wasn't mentioned in the Torah, Mishum Shelo Yatzim and Zichron Yisrael Adaros, because she was not the progenitor of the future of these generations. It's the same thing with Yaakov. Don't ask a question, because it says all the nefesh of Yaakov's family was 70. Devadai hayotem shivim. It certainly was more than 70. Ela shivim elu ayu mechuvanim neged shivim sarayu mosa olam. But they're specifically counted as 70 because there are 70 nations in the world, as it says in Shiras Azinu Pasuk Benchel Elyon Goyim Vigamayim Mishunim Miteva Shar Bnei Adam. But also they were of a different nature, and here is where the Netziv reminds us of some of the information that we are aware of, but we don't put a whole lot of attention to. Shari Shimon Velevi Bnei Yud Gimel Hargu Yir Umloa. Right, when Shimon and Levi were 12 and 13, they wiped out a city. As I noted, that not everybody had circumcised, but nevertheless they were able to do it. Aaron Onan, they were kids when they married Tamar. Peretz was 7 or 8 when he had a child. Dina was 6 years old when Shechem was doing. She says, how does this happen? There was something about this family that was just, I don't want to say supernatural, but a little advanced. Thank you. Okay, v'chein ayu kol shivim nefesh. Masha'en kein shari bonim sholidu lo ayu ela kishar bnei adam. Everybody else was just, you know, was just regular. But these were almost superhuman, exceptional. Okay? So that's that. Now, we haven't answered the question of 32 verses 33. So take a look in Pasuk Ches here, on bottom page 4. Etc. So this is the way that he counts him. Second. I want to get to it. Okay. Take a little skip to the middle of the third line. There are a few problems with the way things are presented here. And so we're going to try to clarify them. It summarizes the count of the Bnei Leah as 33. But really, there are only 32 if you count them. The od kasha, the l'basof mikra chavav, mona kol nefesh shishim v'sheish. He counts everybody, it says 66. But then it adds Yosef, who's in Egypt with his two sons, and that makes 69. V'im b'nei leah, shloshim v'shalosh, sachakol shishim v'sheva. Right?
Yeah.
If you're going to count b'nei leah as 33, so you have to add up b'nei leah, which is 33, plus Zilpah, plus Bilhah, plus Rachel, minus the three of Yosef. If you're getting to this magic number of 70, and you're counting B'nai Leah as 33, because that's the number that you gave, so then how do you get to 66? You're really counting B'nai Leah as 32, if you're going to get to 66, but you already said that they're 33, so make up your mind. So he says, well, we have to figure out how you get to 33. Never heard this one before. That being a Bechor counts as
two,
right? Pishnaim, right?
Yeah.
So when they leave Israel, Ruvain is considered two. That's why Leah, when they leave, is considered 33. So the Bnei Leah are counted as, so that's why when they get to Egypt, you add up all the numbers, it's 66. Why? Because Yosef and family now counts as four. Because Yosef becomes the Bechor.
And the two sons.
Yeah? Doesn't matter. Bechor of Yaakov. That's the point.
Bechor of Yaakov. What about the other two sisters?
What?
Zilpah?
No. It's the question of who is the Bechor in Yaakov's eyes. So Reuven has been the Bechor for a long time because Yosef is gone. But now that they're in Egypt and they're going to be reunited, Yosef is. That's his answer. You don't have to like it. I don't care if you don't like it.
It shouldn't count because the switch
of
Yosef.
Okay. All right.
Come on, fine. You don't like it?
Okay. All right. Okay. Look at Pasuk Chavav. Look at Pasuk Chavav. Pasuk Chavav. Abal Yaakov Mitzrayim, Shomer is the Lord of Mitzrayim. They're about to come to Egypt. That's what he's done. That's what he said. He's just explaining what he said before. Okay. All right. Now. Okay. In the interest of time, no, we have a couple more minutes. Okay. All right. So we'll just do the remaining things in this chapter. Okay. Pasuk Lamed Aleph and Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay. So let's look at the Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay, they come down, Yaakov, Yosef, they embrace Yisrael, however he's presented here. They cry. Yisrael says to Yosef, I can die now that I've seen you, that you're alive. He says, I'm going to tell Paro that my brothers and my father have come, and I'm going to tell them that they are shepherds, and they brought all their animals. When Paro calls you and says to you, what do you guys do? And you should say, that we were Anshe Mikneh. Yosef says, I'm going to tell them that you guys were Roi Tzon, and you're going to say that you are Anshe Mikneh. From the time we were kids until now, so you can live in the land of Goshen, because of this Tovas Mitzrayim idea, which is attached to Roei Tzon. Okay, what that means, whatever. We'll see. So vi'amara. So what Yosef is trying to do is he's trying to set up a plan in which Paro's net response is going to be, hey, all right, you guys can live in Goshen. Okay, and in fact, when Yosef does talk to him, look at the very next pasuk. He says, my family's here. They've come from Canaan. At the end of pasuk Aleph, v'hinam be'eretz Goshen. They're in Goshen. And Paro says, they're in Goshen. All right, I guess I could stay in Goshen. it's just very, very well played and very easily manipulated. V'amara. So Yosef says to the brothers, I'm in the Netziv now, and we're going to just look at the Netziv until the end. There are two ways when it says "come to me." Two ways to understand that when it refers to actually, you know, just making a mini journey. One is that the guest is actually coming to his house, even though his coming is not for himself; he's just coming as a guest. And the second reason that somebody would come is for their own benefit, because they're coming, perhaps, for example, to settle. And Yosef knows that Paro said that they should all come to him. But what was Paro's intent? That he wanted this family to be under his
control.
Right? Under his rishus, under his domain, under his domicile, under his control. Even though he couldn't force them, as we saw earlier, right? And the fact is, since they came with everything, Paro could decide, say, oh, you know what? They're going to serve me. So Paro would settle them in a place that he feels is best for the needs of his kingdom. So how can Yosef say that they came for him? So Yosef needed to convince Paro that they didn't come for Paro, and that they're already in Goshen, and that it's probably in your best interest to let that be. The message Yosef wants to give over to Paro is that they have come to me, which means they're in my house. Yosef is indicating to Paro, they're in my space. So he can't request Goshen, because Yosef really needs to look out, right? He has a job, and as a job, he needs to look out for Egypt. And who knows what Paro's intent is for them? Maybe Paro wants to spread them out. And so Yosef had to just say, hey, you know, they came to me, and right now they're in a holding cell, and that holding cell is
Goshen.
So Paro, what do you say? You know what? They can stay there. Okay? And what does he say? He says, okay, so that's the way he's going to present it to Paro. And in fact, we see what happens. He tells him the story. But in the meantime, so this whole thing about Tovas Mitzrayim. So what is Tovas Mitzrayim? So I actually like what we saw, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, where Tovas Mitzrayim is described as actually being a good thing. And because Tovas Mitzrayim is a term which is used to describe the sheep of Egypt. Right, if you remember what Moshe says in the Makkah of Arov, he says, "Hey, Nizbach is Tovas Mitzrayim v'lonis kalunu." Right, we're going to go ahead and you know, offer. We're going to slaughter the Tovas Mitzrayim, they're not going to stone us. We can't do this in front of everybody. So what's Tovas Mitzrayim there? It's referring to sheep. So now here it's referring to Roi Tzon. So we saw, in the past, we've seen something really nice suggesting that Tovas Mitzrayim might actually be a good thing and that it's an honor to take care of sheep in Egypt. The Netziv obviously does not go that route. He follows the Rashi line of thinking and says that if you're going to be Tovas Mitzrayim, okay, Lo Yirtze Lo Hoshivchem Makom Ikar Yishuv, he's not going to want to settle you in a place where, which is densely populated. Okay, and so Yosef thought, you know what, maybe that's the right way to present it, because this way we will be able to live in that isolation that Yaakov really needs. Even though it might be embarrassing, some kind of denigration in the eyes of Paro, become welcome. Kol kedai kdei lagil zetachas anachutz l'shmiras kedushas Yisrael. You have to preserve the holiness of Israel. Then it's okay to be embarrassed a little bit. Vayikar ratzon Yosef lomar leParo loshon ba'olai, and that is why Yosef said to Paro the main thing that they've come to me. Kedei she'eroa im yakbi Paro alam ro shabolu tzarcho, to see if, to test basically if Paro would be concerned over the fact that they came for Yosef's needs. And this way we can understand his intent in saying that they came to his house. If they came to his house, they can't really request Goshen. Unless Paro is just a little turned off by that which they're planning to do, and he says, you know what? Go take care of your business in Goshen. But in fact, it didn't come out that way. It came out, Paro is actually impressed. Yosef told his brothers, I'm going to tell Paro you're Roei Tzon, and you're going to say that you are Anshei Mekneh. And what ends up happening is Yosef says, they came with animals, and they're in Goshen. That's it. Paro says to the brothers, what do you guys do? And they say, we're Roei Tzon. Yosef said, say Yanshe Mignet, but they said, no, we're Roi Tzon. And Paro says, oh, all right, okay, you're Roi Tzon. Go to Goshen. That's it. And he doesn't seem mad, he doesn't seem upset, he doesn't say, oh, it's Tovas Mitzrayim. None of that.
You might think that they're going to protect his God.
Right. That could very well be. And in fact, the way it is presented.
It made it sound like Paro had the last word saying, okay, go to Goshen.
Right.
He had to be the last word.
There is another piece of this, and we're not going to go through it, but the remaining components of what I gave you just show how Paro responds to this family in a positive way simply because he feels that the land becomes blessed on account of their presence. We have this whole thing about when Paro meets Yaakov, and Paro and Yaakov blesses him, that what's the blessing, and he feels that things have really changed for the good in the land. There is such an idea that While the famine didn't completely end, things were significantly better during the time that they were there during that initial 5-year period, and that's one of the reasons why they didn't really have the opportunity to leave, aside from the fact that it's God's will. But the point is that their presence was a blessing to Egypt, and so Paro wanted them to stay. So, a lot, you know, there's a lot to be said about understanding and appreciating how Paro views the brothers once they're in Egypt. But by and large, it seems that the relationship that exists it just becomes it's branched off of the special relationship that this Paro had with Yosef, and it's transferred on to the family. And we have a tradition, for example, that slavery, that at least the initial steps towards slavery, didn't start until after the death of the last of the brothers. And that is assumed to be Levi. Levi's age is the only one mentioned in the Torah other than Yosef, but it's assumed to be Levi. And where does that all come from? It's this special respect and honor that existed between the Paro of Yosef's days which was extended to Yosef's family, starting from these initial conversations which take place when the family comes down in Parshas Vayigash.
Paro was really elated the fact of here was Yosef, and he was a nothing, he was a nobody, he was one person. Oh, gee, but what about his family? Now, all of a sudden, Paro sees the whole family, and not only just one brother, but you see, you know.
Right, that certainly adds to the prestige of Yosef, that he's not just some, you know, he comes from something chashuv and important.